Black sunrise, sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Sunrise.
Always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
No, we don't.
The way it's going to go.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Check out the Kiwi Collaborators section if you dare. Speaking of which, we have another one. Seamus Coogan. Had a conversation with this fabulous man yesterday for quite some time. And, you know, we had a few laughs and he's been really, he's one of those people who is actually a qualified researcher. All right, and when I say that, I'm not talking about like he's got like degrees and whatnot. I'm talking about somebody who actually looks at things and finds evidence rather than just drawing conclusions from assumptions like I do. Seamus Coogan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for the charming introduction there, mate. It's cool, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody needs to have a voice, and apparently you've been looking around for a truth of radio show done by New Zealanders, and we're the first one you've come across.
Yeah, no, that's really, no, and it is, it's actually, it's really good that you're here, but as you said before, it's actually rather alarming, isn't it, that there really is only one radio station out there that's actually propagating some really good stuff. Like we were talking the other day, we've got so much. Sadly enough, even though you could probably say apolitical show, you've actually got a lot of really intensely right-wing kind of leaning sorts of shows that just crush anything. And I just listened to Leighton Smith this morning. I just can't stand the guy. No, we've got some real trouble here, and it's great that we've got a voice anyway. It's really important.
Indeed.
You're doing a good job, then.
Well, Leighton Smith's good on the climate change debate.
Oh, and Will. What's that one, Will?
Leighton Smith's not too bad on the climate change debate. He's kind of like Michael Laws. You see, the controlled right is good on one side of the coin, and the left are good on the anti-war side of the coin, I suppose.
Yeah, well, it's funny because for me personally, I don't really pay too much attention to the climate debate in a way, because on the one hand, Will, you've got massive corporations saying that there's no climate change and all that kind of stuff, and then on the other, of course, you've got these people trying to start making taxation on, you know, like climate control and all that kind of thing. Either way you look at it, it seems like it's a big scam for big corporations. But I think I tend to go on the environmental side because I'm a green, basically. But also, too, is the fact that I do get concerned about the amount of corporate, you know, input and interest that's been put into the thing, into the anti-pollution side of it. That's a really scary lobby. And I know that might go against some of the grain of some of your viewers and possibly yourselves, but that's just how I view it. But maybe we could debate that at some other time, Will, you know, but because I think it's a good debate worth having for sure, you know.
Oh, it is. It's always one worth having, yeah. I mean, I'm against big corporations. That's why I'm against the world's largest, the Federal Reserve Bank, who issues a fiat currency, who's backing this new world currency they want to form from carbon taxes. So the whole environmental side of it does play into huge corporate lobbies, bigger than ExxonMobil even.
Oh, for sure. And once you start getting companies that have got, you know, higher GDP than countries like Germany, you know what I mean, which are pretty wealthy countries, you know you're in a little bit of trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but Seamus, I mean, maybe you're being a bit deceptive here calling yourself left-wing because you actually want a debate.
I thought that would take you to the gulag, mate.
That's the debate he's offering us.
Oh, yeah. He's throwing up.
That's some soggy potatoes and some horrible stew.
Almost, mate, almost. Maybe next time.
I've got a special message for you, Will. I think that it's important to have these debates and try and reach some kind of compromise with each other's thing. There's no point in having an argument with someone if you can't reach a general conclusion by the end of it. Because otherwise you may as well just be peeing. Hopefully the FCC will let me say that, just into the wind. And there's just no point. So if I'm on again and all those kinds of things, hopefully we can stir up some debates and then find ourselves with some conclusions. You know, that we can all find mutual.
When you were explaining that, I don't know if this is a bad thing or not, but when you were just describing having an argument and coming to a conclusion, I just had this image of a Western in my mind, so like a gun drawer going on. I don't know why. Is that bad? Is that bad? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, we've got Eastwood here.
We have Eastwood on our side, so
I'm definitely the ugly in this equation.
Well, we can be the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. Is Clint Eastwood in the good and the bad, the ugly? Is he technically the good, or is he the bad, or is he the ugly? I mean,
been a long time since I watched it.
You know, he's quite an interesting character, isn't he? I forget his name, just the man with no name, isn't it? He just likes to wear sequins. But in the other one, he was the good. But in the film, and I think another one which was kind of regarded as the sequel to it, Clint Eastwood actually, I think he actually sort of technically raped a woman, I think, and he was still regarded as being a good guy.
Good guys always work for the government, so I guess they have to be rapists. Mandatory. Yeah.
Well, speaking of, look, here's a good one for you guys. Speaking of rape, what about that guy, Asanga, whatever? I've looked into it after a few times. Look, I'm with you guys. As soon as I found out that he had absolutely no claimant, he thought the whole 9/11 truth movement, which I'm not a truther, guys, but I don't know what I am with it, but I know that it's a crock. When he said that, you know, he didn't believe that 9/11 was some sort of inside job, I couldn't believe. I mean, how can people think that he's some kind of truth-seeking hero after a comment like that?
Yeah, he's the man with all the declassified documents, and he can't even work out the most obvious false flag op of the last century.
Absolutely, Will. Sorry, man, for interrupting. It's great to talk to you because, no. And then, of course, you've got newspapers like the New York Times and all that kind of getting in behind him and all that. He's got some big corporate protection now. And is it the New York Post that Rupert Murdoch owns? I'm not sure. But you start getting groups like that in behind you, you've got to question the credibility there, don't you?
No, you're dead right. Your logic, I totally agree with. I mean, we've had other people being whistleblowers for decades. People like Stan Monteith going back decades now. And we're all conspiracy nuts, you know. This guy comes along. No, and he's well-spoken and looks very wealthy and well-placed and all the rest of it. And the media's behind him, Time Magazine's doing pieces on him. He's just the hero. Alarm bell straight away.
Absolutely. As soon as you get Time Magazine, you know. I think there was one, I'm not a huge fan of Burmese, even though I quite like him. I remember, didn't he call Time Magazine, or was it no, he called General Mechanics, didn't he? Popular Mechanics. Like a Hearst yellow rag, you know what I mean?
Doesn't like James, what's the name from Popular Mechanics? Yeah, sure. I think they.
Yeah, no, that's a right.
So, falling out there. James Miggs. Yeah. Yeah, he is a piece of garbage.
So that was right. That's what I would regard, say, Time Magazine as being a yellow rag, you know? For sure. I mean,
Know Time Magazine? Here you go, to get into the conspiracy side of things. To get deep for a minute. Do you know that Time Magazine was founded by Skull and Bones, remember?
Yeah, Henry Luce.
Yep.
Well, the thing about Henry Luce is this is where we start getting into the Kennedy assassination, all that kind of stuff. And he also, it was Hearst that used to govern, popular mechanics, or whatever it was. But this is where we start getting into the Kennedy assassination, which I've been researching for a number of years. And the issue about secret societies and guys like your Henry Luces play an interesting part, not so much because of the secret society thing. In the next couple of conversations, hopefully if you guys would ever want to have me back on after this disastrous intro, we could start talking about some of the secret societies and so forth, supposedly involved. Now, Luce was a very powerful media magnate at the time, and he was also an enemy of John F. Kennedy. He was also a part of what I would call an important cog in what's been termed Operation Mockingbird. I'm sure you guys have heard of that, eh?
Of course, yep. Yep, Glenn
Beck. Absolutely. I'm a CIA employee.
they teach us this at the agency. And they give us the lowdown. Yeah. That was in week 3 of our training.
Yep.
Week 3 of the training.
I'm too busy. That guy Vinny's too busy making me laugh over the top of this. You're asking some. What was there, Will?
No, I just said that was in week 3 of our training at Langley. That they.
Oh, mate.
That'll be used mate. Against us one day.
Yeah. Oh, I think hopefully, so, mate.
Yeah. Get pitched to Venus CIA.
Oh, yeah, and it'll be used by somebody who is like, I don't know, carries around a sense of humor in their pocket like a set of loose keys and loses it from time to time. You know what I'm saying? Come on, people, get a sense of humor.
Yeah, one of those 40-year-old virgins taking the movie out of us on YouTube. Yeah,
just sit back and enjoy the disinfo. Don't you know perception is reality?
Oh mate. Anyway, look. Okay, before I pee myself, I've got to get some serious stuff out of the way here. Okay, so this is going to be what I'm going to call dropping the log, knowledge. The analogy there is pretty gross, but so that started about I think it was 1952 to 1953 was when all this started. Now, Operation Mockingbird, in my opinion, and the opinion of most of the researchers that I work with, and that's a group called CTKA, funnily enough. I was about to say like CIATKA. But
do you have a website there you can plug?
It's Sitka, just CTKA, and just type in Jim, CTKA. Yeah, there's another thing that'll come up underneath, it'll say the Central Texas Kidney Association. But this one actually means Citizens for the Truth about the Kennedy assassination, okay? And that's pretty much that's whom I'm affiliated with, and that's run by an amazing guy by the name of Jim DiEugenio. Now he does a lot of work on another amazing radio show as well, which is called Black Op Radio, which isn't syndicated, okay, like you guys, but it's independent, and that's run by a guy called Leno Sanek. And I'd be great if you guys could one day, and I'll try and help you guys out here trying to get, say, someone like Len on, because he's got an amazing conference coming up in Hawaii this year, in which they're going to have Oliver Stone, Jesse Ventura, they'll have Jim there, and a lot of other people attending. So this is really big because it's been it's almost been 48 years now, and there hasn't been one definitive voice from the JFK research community, okay? And so Len thought it was about time that they got the best researchers together and they came out with some cohesive plan, you know, or an idea of actually what happened. And so this conference is going to be very big. If you've been following the Kennedy assassination at all, you know, it's something to really keep an eye out on, and especially have a look at Black Op Radio as well, which hopefully you guys can forge a little bit of an alliance with at some point. It'll be great. But Sitka's really important. We basically focus on research. That's the thing. We don't really like, how would I say, Will and Vinny, we don't really like making circumspection, you know. We don't like anything that's a little bit loose. We tend to be really careful of. It's just nuts and bolts. And sadly, what I've noticed right throughout the truth movement and the JFK thing and all that is that anybody can just get a blog and just put out anything that they want. And the big problem is that you're actually regurgitating a lot of disinformation, which we mentioned the boys at Langley, you know, putting on a different face. I think in actual fact, they've done that, guys. And they've done that quite effectively, just drip-feeding rubbish stories that people pick up and circulate. What do you guys feel about that kind of stuff? What's, in your guys' experiences, what examples of disinformation can you guys see around you?
The climate change movement. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you know, yeah. It's just like more operatively, the question would be, what haven't we seen as disinfo?
Right. Yeah, true.
You know, everything's bollocks. I mean, take fluoride, for example. You know, I asked the Minister of Health why they were using Prozac and rat poison and putting it into the water supply, and he says it's good for your teeth. I send him a message, an email with a big, you know, document attached to it, which is the confessions of the guy who's the head of the Auckland Dental Association, who was paid by the Dental Association to travel the country and convince communities that fluoride was good for their teeth, admitting that everything he was talking about was a lie. There was no evidence to suggest that fluoride was good for your teeth. And I said to the Minister of Health, Minister, it's going to be a strong man, somebody who actually loves his country and cares about his people that will actually do something about this very important issue, which is one of the most important health ramifications that this country has ever seen. And so naturally, he passed it on to the Assistant Minister of Health.
Who, interestingly enough, is a
great opponent of a 1080 dropping, which is a fluoride derivative as well, being dropped in our forests. And then he replied with a whole bunch of government documents saying how it's good for your teeth. And then I said to him, hey, well, didn't you know that the same thing that's in that 1080 that you're opposing is being dumped into our freaking water supply, sir? And he gave me no reply.
Well, it's a bit of a bright, he's a bit of a bright spark there, isn't he? You know, I mean, it's a really great idea, you know, to do a bit of a double entendre there, you know what I mean? You picked him out on that. Like, in terms of the fluoride and all the water and all that kind of stuff, like you said before, you know, I brush my teeth with it, and all, or he said before I brush my teeth with it. That's a funny one. But the thing I was going to ask you two, it's more or less along the lines, not so much of disinformation, but people that you've seen that have come along and they say that they've got all these great conspiracy ideas or they believe in some stuff, but you know that they're selling, like an Asange, you know what I mean? Like, he's selling a lie, isn't he? You know what I mean? It's that trying to look like he's cool, but he's not. You get what I mean? That double dealing.
I think he's the most prominent one. There are certain movements I don't agree with. Like, I don't agree with the Zeitgeist movement, but they could be earnest in what they're trying to do. I don't know. I don't tend to think there's too many other people who are really bad guys out there. That could be my naivety. I just like seeing, if I disagree, like a lot of people disagree with prominent people in the truth movement, hey, at least they're doing some of the mainstream media one.
Oh, yes.
You guys,
ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back momentarily on the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man.
Welcome
I've been
back
everywhere, man.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show. broadcasting everywhere. At thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Goodness knows. In fact, we're starting to get a lot of websites linking us in, and I wanted to give a special shout out to all of those people who, you know, devote a small section of their website to putting up a banner from the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And if you have a website, then you'd love to put our banner up on it, just to give us a wee bit of a linking in there. You can email producer at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and we'll send one right out to you. Thank you very much. Coming back to our fabulous guest, Seamus Coogan, coming at us live from Palmerston North. Palmerston, Palmerston bloody North.
That's the home of all good things, mate. Center of the universe.
Certainly the center of something. Sorry to our Palmy listeners, but but you know, we wanted to get into, like, what actually woke you up, Seamus? I mean, you told me that you've been kind of researching and getting things done for the best part of close to 17 years or something along those lines. What spurred such a ridiculous career of truthology?
Well, that's a really good question. It's good to kind of bring a little bit of sobriety back to this. Not that I've been drinking or anything like that. I haven't been drinking anything at all. But I have been drinking from, the chalice of truth would be the term, as you said, for 17 years. That sounded really pretentious. But no, it started off for me when I was about 8 or 9 years of age then, and that was when my parents sat me down in front of TV and they watched the Martin Sheen and Sally Field docudrama that was on. It was just a documentary, straight up documentary, and it was just called Kennedy. And I sat down and watched it, and I was quite amazed by it. I thought, "Wow, you know, this is a really, really interesting story." And of course, Kennedy gets shot. Of course, at the end of it, they do the logical thing. Of course, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald does it. You know, of course, that's how they're portraying it anyway. And so I thought, "Wow!" So I really got interested in John F. Kennedy. But as a kid, you know, this is really funny. As a kid, I always thought it was great that that Jack Ruby stuck Lee Harvey Oswald. But why? Because he killed Kennedy, of course, you know, a bit of vengeance. And it's quite funny, really. So, but my mother always used to say to me, there's something more to it. There's something more to it. And mothers do know best. And as it turned out, my parents have been involved in the Palmerston, in the Manawatu peace movement and the New Zealand peace movement for a number of years now. And they organised the May Day concerts and everything like that here in Palmerston North. And yes, Will, they're pretty, we're pretty damn socialist, mate. Sorry.
Oh, no.
So we're all there. And but that was it. And so because of their political activity and their involvement, I started to get a little bit more cynical. Then by the time I was about 13, I was like, oh, God, yeah, there was something probably happened. But I was kind of into this mafia did it tone and all that kind of thing. I still had doubts. So I hit The Men Who Killed Kennedy. That came on TV in 1992, I think it was, just before JFK the movie came out. Now, you guys have seen the Zapruder film before, right?
No.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, we'd see Kennedy's head get, we see his head get, you know, taken off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's called the Zapruder film, and that was filmed by a fellow called Abraham Zapruder, sorry. And he was standing on the knoll and on this little thing. I'll get into more depth about that some other time. But he filmed it anyway. And so now when you guys saw the headshot, what direction do you guys think that it came from, judging by what you saw?
Probably the front right.
The front right.
Some people say the driver. And then I think it came from behind him to his right.
But just judging by his actions in the film,
judging by the way his head moves, but yeah, I'm not an expert on it though.
No, I'm not a ballistics expert too. But I tell you what, you might be in a little bit of a minority there, Will, because every single person chief that's seen it has noticed distinctly that it comes, you know, back and to the left. You know that scene in JFK. If you guys are seeing that, back and to the left. Back and to the left.
I probably have to watch it again right now.
Yeah, well, you have a review of it, Chief. Have a review. But that was,
I mean, in my mind, it's a very complex subject to work out. In my mind, I kind of simplified it and like, well, obviously, one shot doesn't work out. And then, you know, knowing about the mafia connections and the Bush family connections to them and people like Giuseppe Mazzini and goes back to the Masons and whatnot.
Right. We're probably going down a little bit of a track there that we might have to discuss in some other episodes.
Really? You don't think the Mafia had any connections?
No, well, the Mafia had connections, of course, to Jack Ruby, and that was possibly through Santos Traficante. But other than that, the Mafia didn't organise anything in this operation. It looks very much like it was some kind of Central Intelligence Agency operation. It sounds cliched, but it's very true. This is the best research has come out with this. And
one thing that always got me is why the Secret Service guy is protesting, waving his arms around a few times in the air. Why guys weren't on the back of the vehicle. They were dropped off around the corner.
No, very good question. A person that's written a lot about that is a guy called Vince Palomara. And no, that's a very suspicious. That's a very suspicious act. Actually, the agent, I think, I'm not sure who the agent that orders the guy off the car is, but the guy that's waving his arms around, I think, is a guy by the name of Ribka. Okay, and he tried to jump on the back of the car because it was standard stuff. You have two guys on the platforms at the back, but he was getting waved off, and that happened at Love Field. And that happened quite often while they were going along the motorcade. I think a number of times they tried to get on the running boards and they were actually warned off. So that was just one of the only incidents of it. In terms of the assassination, I don't think that anybody can actually dismiss Secret Service involvement in that at all. I think there were people in the Secret Service, from what we do know now, especially through Vince Palomara and the work of Jim Diodino and others, that there were members of the Secret Service that actually hated Kennedy. Okay, a lot of them were really quite conservative and all that kind of stuff as well. So, no, there's some definite suspicions about the Secret Service there, and Vince Palomar is someone to read. Some of the problem with a lot of the Kennedy stuff, though, Will, is that because it's so research-intensive, sadly, it's actually really inaccessible. It's quite inaccessible in some ways for people that are unfamiliar with the case to actually get into. And I think that's one of the great weaknesses of the field, is that it really hasn't been what I call it Carl Sagan, in the sense that I'm not a huge fan of Carl Sagan. I think he said some horrific stuff. But he wrote that book, Cosmos, in which he put a lot of really simple things into...
I've got his book, The Demon Haunted World. I wouldn't say I'm a big fan of him either.
Right, yeah, well, that's right. The stuff.
In my opinion, the JFK thing is just an open and shut conspiracy. JFK signed two resolutions, presidential 11110 and 11111, abolishing the CIA and abolishing the Federal Reserve, and then he gets shot. Case closed.
Well, you know what? It's really funny because Kennedy had an interesting history with the Federal Reserve, and one of the people that you brought up the other day was a guy called Ed Griffin. Okay, and I've struggled with some of Ed's stuff, Edward Griffin. So I've struggled with some of his stuff over the time. But one of the articles that I found really interesting was how he was discussing, you know, the difficulties that Kennedy was actually having. There's a lot of myths about the Kennedy assassination, and the Federal Reserve one is an interesting part of it, and there might be some elements of truth to it. But there's a whole other bunch of factors as well. When G. Edward Griffin wrote a really interesting piece about Kennedy's relationship with the Federal Reserve, which I think people should go and have a check out. I don't think he did too badly on that. Another person, if you want to look into the Wall Street angle of it, or the banking thing, one of the best books that I've had recommended to me is by a guy called Donald Gibson. Hopefully one day we can get him on the show and he can talk about that, okay? And he basically talks about, you know, the interests of Wall Street and how involved they were in the Kennedy assassination. And there's a lot of that. I'd say around about a good 80% of that book is absolute gold, okay? And when you get 80% in the Kennedy field, mate, that's a very good book. So that's something else to look at too. So
Well, there's been a lot of commentary from people who are heavy-duty researchers into the JFK and people who've been trying to make films about it, that it's almost impossible to do because there are so many elements. And reportedly, over 100 people, 100 witnesses who were saying that they saw shooters on the grassy knoll and things of that nature were killed in the following days.
Well, see, yeah, see, that's another. All right, geez, that's a good question too. Look, there's definitely been some suspicious deaths. I think that there's no doubt about that, Vinny. I can't really name any at the top of my head. Dorothy Kilgallen was a really interesting one. That's one that really sticks out for me. George Demornchild's death. Look into that guy. That's a really interesting death. We could talk about him some other stage. But yeah, no, there's some of the numbers, I think, were a little bit grossly exaggerated. They put them up just to sell a newspaper. I think that was the idea. No, there was definitely some suspicious deaths, though, for sure. And let's not talk about the amount of people that were harassed. You know, they were intimidated and told to shut the hell up, which goes par for the course in anything like this, isn't it? So that's the... That's really interesting. But no, that I'd take that whole story, and that sort of originated with a guy called Penn Jones. He was really into it. And so some of the stories it was a newspaper article, I think, that said that, who'd used some of Penn Jones' stuff. I'll correct myself on that issue later on if someone tells you how badly wrong I got that one. But sort of, if I could bring it back, if it's okay, guys, just to one thing. So anyway, there's a whole other culture in the Kennedy assassination too. It's the reason why it is so hard, is that how we were talking about the headshot, Will, and we were talking all those sorts of things, what we saw. When I saw that film, I immediately thought, right, this is a conspiracy. He was not shot from behind, as a whole bunch of other people have done. Now, the big issue here is that we've got a version of reality here which goes even above and beyond the conspiracy itself. We call it the alterationist phenomenon. What that is that you've got people, and I'm not going to name names. If you want to learn more about the Kennedy assassination, you will. But they think that basically every little piece of evidence has been manipulated after the fact. Photos have been faked. Well, there might be some evidence of that. That's not such a hassle. But it's like, you know, Kennedy's body was hacked up on the plane to prove that there was, you know, like the lone gunman thesis. It's just some ridiculous.
Before he managed to get into anywhere that would do a credible autopsy on him, of course.
Well, that whole story is bunk, man. You know, it really, really is bunk. And they had no need to do that when the military were controlling the autopsy in the first place anyway. A lot of that stuff is pure myth, man, and it's being foisted upon people as if it's being truth. And it really hasn't been. It's untested and it's speculative and it's also BS. Okay, so really, and that's going to offend some people that have really bought into a lot of these things. Now, one of the more current myths as well in terms of all of this is that the Zapruder film has been altered. Now, I'm sorry, but whenever I see the Zapruder film, I see his head go back and to the left. You know, I don't know what it's been altered for. That's proving a conspiracy to me. I don't know what other planet other people are on. But some people are saying, oh, little bits have been taken out, they've altered it. And then some guys even gone as far to say that Zapruder himself was a CIA agent. And this person, by the way, is the same guy. Just a question, what do you guys think of the idea of no planes flying into the World Trade Center? What do you guys think of that?
Sounds pretty... I don't believe it necessarily, but, you know, I would... if somebody would present some description of credible evidence to the contrary of my belief, then...
But the problem is, where did the crossover from a holographic event to a real event happen? Because there's no denying those buildings came down.
That's right. And that's right, the no planers. And they've been quite a divisive force, haven't they, within the truth movement at times?
Well, if you look at that crazy freak they had down, Nico, down at Ground Zero, who was one of the prominent guys. I mean, he's a psychopath. He's probably working for them. He was there to provoke violence and punch a few guys and so on.
Yes, indeed. And it is a lovely, lovely truth movement, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? Not fraught with danger and discrimination, is it? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will. Our very special guest is Seamus Coogan, and we'll be right back after the break.
Uh, tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's business time.
That's right.
At the Vinnie Eastwood Show, we're having that's a little bit of foreplay with our fabulous guest, Seamus. You've got a monstrous cackle on you there, mate. All right, now we were talking over the break.
Oh, man.
We were talking over the break about disinfo, and who was that guy that you were talking about before the break, Will?
Nico Haupt, a crazy, I don't know if it's crazy German drunkard thing that used to hang around at Ground Zero. When I say used to, he was doing it until last year. He finally got arrested the KSM protest led by We Are Change guys. But like, he'd just go down there and say, We Are Change are shills and Luke Radowski is this, that, and the other. And he just, in this crazy accent of his, swagging around. Heading woman, and I mean, he's just out of hand. The guy was nuts, like genuinely nuts. But then I know a couple of no planers here in Auckland, New Zealand, and they're not bad people or anything. Some of them have done some amazing research, and you know, they've said to me, "Oh, if you look in this video here, taken of you know just after the South Tower impact." One of these guys is a Canadian actor, and I mean, I followed a few leads like that. Hey, there were some suspicious things. You know, the guy who straight away is interviewed after Tower One's collapse, I think it was, and he says, "Oh, you know, mostly due to structural failure, because the fire was just too intense." I mean, he speaks right. like an engineer after just witnessing a few thousand people be destroyed. You know, it kind of psychopathic. Kind of, or to me, he's an agent. To them, he was an actor in this larger digital cinematographic screenplay.
Right.
You know, it's just, yep. it's a way where then the media comes back to us and people like Kim Hill here in New Zealand and other half-wit shills, shills on another level, dumbass shills, they then come and say, well, what theory do you believe in exactly?
Yeah.
What theory of 9/11? Well, there is only one theory. It's a controlled demolition, you know, and that's all there is to me. And I like people like Richard Gage. If I was going to subscribe to any one storyline, I agree with Richard Gage and Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Other than the ones that defected with the no planers,
right? Yeah. Well, the no planers and stuff like that are really interesting, Will. And you mentioned before about setting up straw candidates. Off the break, we talked about straw candidates, and I think that's what this sort of thing does. And I know two people. One of them's really lovely, and I really quite like him. But there's another one that's sort of a little bit off the boil. But those two are some of the major proponents. I think, in actual fact, the one person that I'm talking about that started a lot of this JFK, not started, but supports a hell of a lot of disinfo in the JFK field. Which serves to confuse and confound, and particularly people that are new on the scene, was prominent in the no planes hitting the World Trade Center theory. So this is and this is the thing. I don't think that the person himself is actually being conscious or being an actual agent himself. But I think
Nico.
Not Nico, but the person who originated it. One of the originators of it. Is,
the web fairy.
The web fairy would call them, yes. And I think that in actual fact, you know, I talked about it with Vinny the other day, Will, and you might have talked about it before though too, but just the use of useful idiots, people that think that they're in a position of
They're designed to create a fog of war so that newcomers come into a movement and they're just too confused. They don't know what weighs up, what weighs down, and then they just go back to being a zombie. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's right.
Yeah, that's why technically I'm not part of any movement. I just gravitate within all the different groups kind of thing whilst not being an active member of any organization at all, apart from, you know.
Except for Guerrilla Media.
Yeah. You know, well, Guerrilla Media is my organization, and if people want to join it, fine, because I can't control you.
Can you join your group? Is there such thing as a joining membership thing? No, not really. Yeah.
Not really. I mean, I don't really care. Everybody could post up whatever they want and just straight up go in there. There's no real agreements to sign other than, you know, don't swear and stuff like that. And you can just go for your life. I mean, I basically don't care about credibility and things like that because, well, I don't have any. That's why I bring people on the show that do. Because I think people should listen to them rather than me. I just happen to be good at presenting them.
Oh no, for sure. But I think we're all attachments, isn't it, mate? And I think you're doing a great job. And I think you're actually quite knowledgeable yourself. Don't talk yourself down, man. Like, but CTKA is very much the same thing as that, guys. Okay. So you mentioned just the Guerrilla News thing. I'm not actually a member. In actual fact, it doesn't actually have members as such. There's nothing official and all that kind of stuff, but it's a group of people that get together, and it's not a clip group either, though some people get the impression that it is. It's just people that put together really good research, and we all support each other through it, and we peer review. We're the only group. Do you know what? I think we're one of the only peer-reviewed groups on the internet that looks at other people's research, okay? You get a whole bunch of people together and we go over it. And that's one of the only groups that does that in anything, in either 9/11, or we know that we're the only guys that do it in JFK. And probably there aren't too many people that do it in 9/11 either.
Just say, mate, 9/11 was a...
inside job.
Controlled demolition. It was inside job. There you go. It was a controlled
demolition. Well, do you know what?
It was a setup.
Do you know what? We're running out of time here.
And Seamus Olivia, thank you very much for coming on the show with us today. And, you know, Will said over the break, you're more of a 2-hour guest. So let's bring you on again sometime. Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back again tomorrow. Check out the archives at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.